Saray. "Will we ever see Mommy again?" Rachel asked between sobs. She had asked this each time. "I don't know, sweetheart," responded Saul truthfully. The funeral was at the family cemetery in Cates County on Barnard's World. The press did not invade the graveyard itself, but Teeps hovered beyond the trees and pressed against the black iron gate like an angry storm tide. Richard wanted Saul and Rachel to stay a few days, but Saul knew what pain would be inflicted on the quiet farmer if the press continued their assault. Instead, he hugged Richard, spoke briefly to the clamoring reporters beyond the fence, and fled to Hebron with a stunned and silent Rachel in tow. Newsteeps followed to New Jerusalem and then attempted to follow to Dan, but military police overrode their chartered EMVs, threw a dozen in jail as an example, and revoked the Farcaster visas of the rest. In the evening, Saul walked the ridgelines above the village while Judy watched his sleeping child. He found that his dialogue with God was audible now, and he resisted the urge to shake his fist at the sky, to shout obscenities, to throw stones. Instead, he asked questions, always ending with, "Why?" There was no answer. Hebron's sun set behind distant ridges, and the rocks glowed as they gave up their heat. Saul sat on a boulder and rubbed his temples with his palms. Saray. They had lived a full life, even with the tragedy of Rachel's illness hanging over them. It was too ironic that in Saray's first hour of relaxation with her sister, Saul moaned aloud. The trap, of course, had been in their total absorption with Rachel's illness. Neither had been able to face the future beyond Rachel's death, disappearance. The world had hinged upon each day their child lived, and no thought had been given to the chance of accident, the perverse anti-logic of a sharp-edged universe. Saul was sure that Saray had considered suicide just as he had, but neither of them could ever have abandoned the other. Or Rachel. He had never considered the possibility of being alone with Rachel when... Saray. At that moment, Saul realized that the often angry dialogue which his people had been having with God for so many millennia had not ended with the death of old Earth, nor with the new diaspora, but continued still. He and Rachel and Saray had been part of it, were part of it now. He let the pain come. It filled him with the sharp-edged agony of resolve. Saul stood on the ridgeline and wept as darkness fell. In the morning, he was next to Rachel's bed when sunlight filled the room. "Good morning, Daddy." "Good morning, sweetheart." "Where are we, Daddy?" "We've gone on a trip. It's a pretty place." "Where's Mommy?" "She's with Aunt Tetha today." "Will we see her tomorrow?" "Yes," said Saul. "Now let's get you dressed and I'll make breakfast." Saul began to petition the Church of the Shrike when Rachel turned 3. Travel to Hyperion was severely limited, and access to the time tombs had become all but impossible. Only the occasional Shrike pilgrimage sent people to that region. Rachel was sad that she had to be away from her mother on her birthday, but the visit of several children from the kibbutz distracted her a bit. Her big present was an illustrated book of fairy tales, which Saray had picked out in New Jerusalem months before. Saul read some of the stories to Rachel before bedtime. It had been 7 months since she could read any of the words herself. But she loved the stories, especially Sleeping Beauty, and made her father read it to her twice. "I'm going to show Mommy it when we get home," she said through a yawn as Saul turned out the overhead light. "Good night, kiddo," he said softly, pausing at the door. "Hey, Daddy." "Yes?" "Later, alligator." "Wild crocodile." Rachel giggled into her pillow. It was, Saul thought during the final 2 years, not so much different from watching a loved one falling into old age. Only worse. 1,000 times worse. Rachel's permanent teeth had fallen out over intervals between her 8th and 2nd birthdays. Baby teeth replaced them, but by her 18th month, half of these had receded into her jaw. Rachel's hair, always her one vanity, grew shorter and thinner. Her face lost its familiar structure as baby fat obscured the cheekbones and firm chin. Her coordination failed by degrees, noticeable at first in a sudden clumsiness as she handled a fork or pencil. On the day she could no longer walk, Saul put her down in her crib early, and then went into his study to get thoroughly and quietly drunk. Language was the hardest for him. Her vocabulary loss was like the burning of a bridge between them, the severing of a final line of hope. It was some time after her 2nd birthday receded that Saul tucked her in and, pausing in the doorway, said, "Later, alligator." "Huh?" "See you later, alligator." Rachel giggled. "You say, 'in a while, crocodile,'" said Saul. He told her what an alligator and crocodile were. "In a while, acadile," giggled Rachel. In the morning, she had forgotten.